The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. It's a Wednesday, so welcome to the middle of the week. We're making progress in terms of getting to the weekend. That's a good thing. Sure beats the alternative. So today, I'm excited about our guest, but I got to tell you, I'm a little bit intimidated because, Matt Stoller is known. He's like one of the original progressive bloggers back, you know, from the early 2000s when blogging really got started. You know, he was in there with Digby and the big names. And I wasn't back then. I wasn't around. I was still doing music radio back then. So I came to the scene a little late. But Matt Stoller was in that original group. He was one of the founders of Open Left, My DD. He worked with those people, with Mike Lux and, names are escaping me now, but he was one of them. And he then went on to be a Capitol Hill policy advisor. He worked for both Alan Grayson in the House and Bernie Sanders' Budget Committee in the Senate. These days, he's an author of a book called, of course, what's the name of the book? Come on, I got it right in front of me. The book is called Goliath. Duh. And he deals with monopolies and antitrust laws and stuff. So what happened was, you may recall a few weeks ago, I was fortunate enough to have Cory Doctorow on the program, who, by the way, will be back for the full hour on Monday. Because when he was with us last month, the half hour that I had allotted for our segment flew by, and I had so many more questions because the topic was kind of fascinating. So we booked him to come back for the full hour so I can just pick his brain and we can talk. But when I had him on the show, he told me that there was a package of legislation working its way through Congress on antitrust. I think he said there were five bills. There were actually six. And sure enough, he was on the show. I think it was on a Thursday, and on the following Monday, the news broke that indeed the House Judiciary Committee would be marking up this package of six antitrust bills. So I was talking to Howie Klein about it, and he wasn't aware of it either. I had tweeted to Cory when the news broke, "Is this what you were talking about on my show the other day?" He said, "Absolutely is," and so now that package of six bills has gone through the subcommittee and the Judiciary Committee, and it's going to go to the full Congress. Howie suggested I talk to Matt Stoller, and that's when I went, I'd love to, but I don't know him. I mean, I know of him. We've just never spoken. We've never met. And so he introduced us. And so I asked him, I invited him on the show, and his first response was, "Well, we are not taking a position on those bills at this point." And I thought, okay, well, we don't really necessarily need to talk about specifics of those bills, but just overall, the need for antitrust, if not legislation, then enforcement. I mean, we've got these behemoths that just run entire industries. You've got the Amazons of the world. You've got Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google and YouTube and all the other entities they own. So this is a big issue. And then I didn't hear back from him for a few days until this batch of bills cleared the Judiciary Committee. And then he wrote me back. He said, "Now we can talk about it." So he will join us at the bottom of the hour today. So I'm a little intimidated because this is a guy who is known to be kind of tough, but so am I. So I think we'll be okay. He's not an adversary, and I'm looking forward to talking to him. So anyway, that's coming up in the second half hour of the show. And, you know, it's weird. It's kind of a slow news week. Congress, of course, is on recess. The Senate will be back next week. The House will be out another week because the Senate was just off for 3 weeks, remember? But before we get into antitrust and Trump today filing a lawsuit against Google, Facebook, and Twitter, it was just a coincidence. I didn't plan it this way, but we'll get into that a little bit too. It's honestly, it's not about antitrust. He's alleging First Amendment violations, and it just proves that he has no clue what the Constitution says. But you knew that too, right? But there's another story. I briefly hit on it the other day, but it's making me, the more I think about it, the angrier I get. And go figure, there was an op-ed in the Washington Post on the subject that I thought was just quite brilliant that I'm going to share with you. Now, I'm not usually much of a Dana Milbank fan. I mean, he's okay, but he's not one that I, like, every time he writes a column, I read it. Sometimes I agree with him, sometimes not. But this one, this was great. So, in fact, you know what? I'm going to just read it because he explains the story. But I'll start with this jingle. Do you remember? Hold on. Do you remember this commercial jingle? Okay, I don't. That's from the early 80s. I guess I wasn't paying attention back then. But I guess that was a big Toyota jingle because Dana Milbank opens the column published yesterday at the Washington Post by writing, "Oh, what a feeling, and it isn't a good one." And then he continues, "Approaching yesterday's six-month anniversary of the January 6th insurrection, the liberal watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington tallied contributions that corporate PACs have made to the 147 insurrectionists in Congress. Those are the members who voted to overturn the results of the 2020 election, even after the Trump mob's deadly attack on the Capitol." Right? You remember that, right? Well, most corporations stuck to their initial pledges and didn't give money, at least not directly, to those who stood for overthrowing democracy. But one company has bankrolled the insurrectionists at a level far higher than the others. Toyota. The car maker gave $55,000 to 37 of the insurrectionist lawmakers, according to Crew, more than quadruple the runner-up, Cigna, who gave to 9, and quintuple Coke Industries, who gave to 7. They gave to 37. A Toyota spokesman, writes Dana Milbank, told me the company, quote, supports candidates based on their position on issues that are important to the auto industry and the company, end quote. Apparently, writes Milbank, constitutional democracy isn't one of those issues. This leaves me with one question. Would anybody like to buy my 2017 Toyota Sienna? I suspect I'm not the only one who won't be buying another Toyota. Toyota likes to say its cars are, quote, made in America, while its actions are unmaking America. If Toyota's wishes to solidify its standing as the official car of the insurrectionists, I suggest a more comprehensive approach. Toyota should roll out a new line of vehicles, renamed and redesigned to reflect target customers. Those who attacked the Capitol on January 6th should get special 3%er financing. All right, so he's now introducing the new line of Toyota cars. So I thought I'd give it my best voiceover treatment and we'll make it like a commercial. All right. So we start with the 2022 Toyota Prius, formerly Prius. Don't recognize Joe Biden as the legitimate president? Then transport yourself back to a time when America led the world in COVID-19 deaths and had the greatest job losses since Herbert Hoover. Toyota's hybrid technology will excite those who want it all. More MPGs, miles per gallon, and more MTGs, Marjorie Taylor Greens. Then there's the 2022 Toyota Paranoia, formerly Sequoia. Vaccines turning you magnetic? Government confiscating your guns? Mask mandates feeling like the Holocaust? Car and Driver says the paranoia has best-in-class handling of conspiracy theories and an adaptive variable suspension that allows you to roll over the most stubborn facts in quiet comfort. There's the 2022. Come on, music. Oh, did I not? Oh, I played the wrong one. Oh, hold on. I got it on a loop here. All right. Then there's the 20. I think. Why isn't it playing? My musical bed just let me down. Oh, my goodness. All right. This? No. All right. Doesn't want to work. We'll try this again. All right. Then there's the 2022 Toyota Paranoia. Oh, I did that one already. The 2022 Toyota Rotunda, formerly Tundra. The Capitol Police will scatter when you drive this bad boy over the barriers and up the West Lawn, smashing right into the Capitol Dome. Its flatbed can carry 1,730 pounds of tear gas, flagpoles, gas masks, fire extinguishers, and nooses to use against uncooperative police and lawmakers. The 2022 Toyota Gunrunner, formerly 4Runner. Busted for bringing in 11 Molotov cocktails, a rifle, shotgun, three pistols, a crossbow, several machetes, a stun gun, and smoke devices to the Capitol? Then test drive the all-new Gunrunner. Its many compartments hold all your ammunition and your pipe bombs, too. The 2022 Toyota RAV4-chan, formerly RAV4, blocked on Twitter, banned from Facebook, the RAV4-chan gives everybody a way to gab. Optional 8chan transmission will telegram your views to even more like-minded drivers. The 2022 Homelander, formerly Highlander. White nationalists will love this crossover, which goes from zero to insurrection in just 5 seconds and is equipped with the Supreme Court's latest voter suppression technology, giving you an effortless ride to victory. The 2022 Toyota Supremacist, formerly Supra. 8 standard airbags in this sports car will protect your Anglo-Saxon traditions. Oath keepers swear by this car. And 9 in 10 Proud Boys boast that the Supremacist puts America first. Imported from China, available only in white. My space is limited, but Toyota's offerings are not. The 2022 Toyota 1.6, formerly the 8.6, NTV Trimline turns even the most violent attack on democracy into a normal tourist visit. The 2022 Toyota Bad Loser, formerly Land Cruiser, has standard leather seats for 8 insurrectionists and 18-inch forged aluminum alloy wheels to run over even the most determined racial justice demonstrators. The Toyota Shamry, formerly Camry, ends election fraud with a state-of-the-art theft deterrent system guaranteed to stop the steal. Lexus, that's Toyota's luxury brand, will add a new line to its IS, ES, and LS sedans to appeal to those who get their news from Fox, the Lexus BS. Toyota will also revive the discontinued Scion IQ subcompact to be marketed as the Toyota Q, with truly unbelievable performance. To make America great again, Toyota will import its Toyota Succeed van from the Japanese market, rebranded as the Toyota Succeed. Toyota, hoping to appeal to those insurrectionists who have beaten or sprayed chemicals on police, is experimenting with a redesigned Tacoma, the Toyota Hematoma, and a new Yaris, the Toyota Tear Gas. Those awaiting trial for their January 6th activities will find refuge in the new Mirai, the Toyota Alibi. And all the 37 members of the Insurrectionist Caucus who have received campaign cash from Toyota will have exclusive use of a tricked-out line of the Corolla, the new Corolla, the Toyota Paola. Toyota cyber ninjas are currently auditing road test results. Yeah. Again, Dana Milbank. I didn't know he had it in him. Good for him. I took great pleasure in reading that column. I will post it on the blog today should you care to share it. You know, I used to have a Prius until my daughter totaled it. I loved that car. I thought eventually I'll get another one. But no, I will not. No, I will not. That was just brilliant. Thank you, Dana Milbank. Love that. All right. Here is the filibuster. See if I can even pull up video for you.
McConnell made it clear who they be. They follow blinders with a zombie. Hindering progress, it makes me nervous. They forgot their public servants. And they say, we come with a filibuster. A progress stalling mid-red cluster. Can you hear all this interest bluster? Send them out and let you know past muster. And set our work across the aisle. But we all know that's a waste of while. He said, do you speak my language? McConnell smirked and gave him a sandwich.
A shit sandwich.
Said, I remember that filibuster. Make fun of me a feather duster. He's out of time to pass my stir.
These 100 people are the U.S. Senate. They pass laws, they vote, and when a majority says yes, the law passes. But these days, the Senate doesn't do that very often. See, the Senate has this rule. It says before they vote, 60 people have to agree to have the vote. This means that just 41 people, a minority, can entirely block a bill. That's called a filibuster.
These are times when action is vital. In place of action, there's denial. Participation drops to zero. Corporate donors say you're our hero. And they say, keep using that filibuster. Inertia is what you must muster. That's how we'll retain power. And action is the goal of the hour. McConnell made it clear who they mean. They follow blinders with a zombie. Hindering progress, it makes me nervous.
Ah, I guess it ends suddenly like that. There you go. It's the parody project, Don Caron, with filibuster to the tune of Down Under. Who, by the way, the chat room reminds me, is on lockdown again. At least Sydney, Australia is. Ay, ay, ay. All right. I got to bring Progressive Voices back. Come on back, Progressive Voices listeners. Let's end that break. My computer just doesn't like to cooperate. That's why I don't do this very often, because everything sort of stops down. It's supposed to be seamless like that. All right. So something that I've been neglectful on, you know, I am in Florida and people are saying, so is it rainy? Is it windy? What's going on down there? Well, no, because I'm in Southeast Florida. You know, I'm not too far from, well, I am. I'm about an hour away from Surfside, where the building collapsed 2 weeks ago now. They're finally, now that they took down the part of the building that was still standing somewhat, they're finding more bodies. I think it's cruel and unusual punishment to keep calling it a rescue search going on. It's been 2 weeks. Nobody's going to be found alive in there. And to give those families hope is just really, really sad. But anyway, we got lucky in the sense that the storm just went west before it turned north. So it went up the west coast of Florida, and I think it regained strength. It had slowed to a tropical storm, regained, built up again to a hurricane strength, a Category 1. But still, you don't want to be in the path of a Category 1 storm. You certainly don't want to be in the path of a Category 5 storm, but you don't want to be in a Category 1 either. Anyway, it stayed out in the Gulf long enough so that when it hit, and I think it must have hit sometime in the last couple of hours, It hit like North Florida, like Pensacola area, if my trajectory is correct. And that's Matt Gaetz territory. So if it's got to hit part of Florida, I know that's terrible of me to say, right? No, I don't wish it on anybody. But so it looks like most of Florida caught a pass. Thankfully. I mean, we don't get away with much down here, but thankfully we got that. Oh, Otto's back in the chat room. Hey, Otto, you've been missed. All right. So, all right. We're going to be joined in a few minutes, I hope, by Matt Stoller, and we'll introduce him when the time comes. But I do want to bring up this sort of somewhat related story. It is, but it isn't. So the former guy today announced a class action lawsuit against Facebook and its CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, Twitter and its CEO, Jack Dorsey, and YouTube/Google and its parent company, Alphabet CEO, Sundar Pichai, I think is how you say his name. The complaints demand that a federal court reinstate his social media accounts, right? Pay punitive damages. For what? And that the court throw out Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act as a, quote, unconstitutional delegation of authority. Now, quite bizarrely, Trump's attorneys, who've come under some ridicule today on social media, I mean, somebody, I don't even know who said it, somebody said, maybe it's time to worry when you notice that Trump's attorneys all have @AOL.com email addresses. And they're suing Facebook, Google, and Twitter. Anyway, the attorneys are arguing that Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube are not private technology companies, but rather arms of the federal government. What? Did they become arms of the federal government when Trump was in the White House? Because this is the first I've heard of it. It says their complaints claim that the company's, quote, status thus rises beyond that of a private company to that of a state actor, and that their content moderation decisions amount to the unlawful suppression of Trump and his co-defendants' First Amendment rights when removing COVID and election-related misinformation. Okay, see, none of that makes any sense to me, but then again, Donald Trump doesn't make any sense to me. Another one of the legal experts who I follow on Twitter pointed out something really important and just wrote, this lawsuit could end up forcing Trump to testify about January 6th under oath. That would be awesome. That's discovery. Yes? If they're part of the government, do we get to share in their profits? Well, you know, you would think, and they should pay taxes, right? But they don't, and we're not, and they're not, and who knows why he does the things he does? Just that he's a narcissist, an attention whore, a demented individual, really sad person. And by the way, so he has this press conference, I guess it was today, up. He's not in Mar-a-Lago now because it's too hot for him down here in the summertime. So he stays at the place in New Jersey, his resort in New Jersey, because I guess he no longer lives in Trump Tower with Melania anymore. So he's up there. I forget the name of the place, but the New Jersey resort that they decked out to look like the Rose Garden. He had a podium with a fake presidential seal. He had his minions, you know, flanking him on all sides, and he, you know, answered questions, which were mostly softball questions, until somebody asked him about January 6th. And he started in, I'm not going to play any sound, I didn't pull any sound. He started in with, there was no reason for Ashley Babbitt to be killed. Are you kidding me? That's just ridiculous. So anyway, so that happened. I do not believe that Donald Trump's lawsuit has anything to do with what we're about to talk about here. It's a weird coincidence is all. But, all right, I see our guest is joining us. So I'm going to start as I get our shot set up because I do everything myself, one woman show here. So I get our shot set up and I'll tell you a little bit about Matt Stoller, and hopefully our shot is already set up because I'm just so diligent in my job here. So I'm going to bring him in. Matt Stoller is somebody that I've been familiar with for years, although this is the first time we've met. He's the director of research at the American Economic Liberties Project, if I got that right. Hey, Matt, good to see you. Thank you so much for joining. I got that right. Thank you for being here today. I do have a whole intro written up for you. Just my computer likes to get all staggery on me when I try to move things around. Okay, so the website there is economicliberties.us. He's also a veteran of Capitol Hill, having served as a senior policy advisor to the Senate Budget Committee under Bernie Sanders, focusing on trade, competition policy, and financial services. And before that, Matt was a senior policy advisor for then-Congressman Alan Grayson on legislation to audit and reform the Fed, on foreclosure fraud and financial reform, and other things. And he's the author of a recent book. So the book Goliath, The 100-Year War Between Monopoly Power and Democracy, came out in October. So during the pandemic, you had a book release. That's not a good time to really release a book, is it, or is it?
It's not a good time to release a book. My book actually came out in October of 2019.
Oh.
So I missed the pandemic, thankfully.
And all my hard research there, I got it wrong. So
No, it's good. It holds up.
It does. And the book holds up because this is, and this is really what you're writing and talking about now. You continue writing about the history and politics of monopoly power in your big Substack newsletter, which people can get by going to mattstoller.substack.com. And it's called Big. Is that because you're focusing on big companies that maybe shouldn't be quite so big?
Yeah, it's a market power, you know, is in many ways, Louis Brandeis was a Supreme Court justice and in many ways structured our approach to corporate America. You know, he used to talk about the curse of bigness. And so I wanted to, you know, kind of use that idea. And that's where the name Big came from.
Gotcha. So nothing to do with the movie or wanting to relive your childhood or anything like that.
It was entirely, I'm a fan of Tom Hanks. I'm like, I have a newsletter. Maybe I should just, I'll name it after.
There you go.
I was going to also considering Saving Private Ryan, but I went with Big.
That you would have to explain too much, I think, if that were the case.
That's right.
So anyway, as I said at the beginning, I've been aware of you for years, though this is the first time we've actually spoken. And the way this came about, just so you know, is Cory Doctorow was on the show last month. And while we were talking about antitrust and the need for regulations or for enforcement of regulations. And he alerted us to this package of legislation that was working its way through Congress. And sure enough, it was just a few days later that we heard the markup was happening in the House Judiciary Committee. Well, Howie Klein is my regular every Thursday guest. And so we were talking about it and I mentioned it to him. He wasn't aware of the legislation either at the time, but he said, you know who you need to talk to is Matt Stoller. And so I reached out to you and you said, well, we're not commenting on the legislation yet. And then they did the markup. It went through committee. And then you wrote back and said, well, actually, now I can talk about it. So I'm glad because this is something that I don't think enough people are discussing. Certainly the corporate mainstream media doesn't talk about it. And I think I have a reason that they don't. It's just a little complicated. And I think if you can't sort of explain it in a way that they can easily get out in a few sentences, that they don't bother going there because it's just, I don't know, it's too hard. They don't think their audience can handle it. But the fact remains, we have antitrust legislation laws in this country that are just not enforced. Or have they been repealed? Is the Sherman Antitrust Act still in effect?
It is, yes. So the antitrust laws are still on the books.
But there's no enforcement of them.
There is enforcement. Some the courts have read antitrust law very narrowly, and the enforcement has been lax. So what's happened over the last 40 or 50 years since this problem started, it's really a kind of a Reagan-era problem, and it got worse over time, is you've seen consolidation in every sector of the American political economy. It was, you know, it's things like Walmart, so you have the retail sector, but also manufacturing, mining, defense industrial base, media.
Media.
Technology.
Hello.
And there's really, there hasn't been a lot of enforcement or sufficient enforcement, particularly against corporate concentration, because you can, they can use antitrust against workers, and they have. So when you say enforcement, you know, you can use it in bad ways too. But yeah, there's a huge problem, and now there is a reaction against it. And, you know, you saw in Congress those, that legislation you were talking about, but also, you know, Lena Khan, who is a
sort of
a star in the antitrust world. She's now the head of the Federal Trade Commission, which is one of our antitrust enforcers.
Yes.
So we're at kind of a pivot point where these statutes, which are kind of dusty, have not really been used a lot. And so, you know, for 40, 50 years, people are starting to dust them off and say, hey, how do we use them? Do we need to strengthen them? What do we do about these large companies that now exist, and so on and so forth?
And so, I mean, you mentioned media, and I had a reaction because I come from the world of media. I do this, you know, political show these days, but my entire career has been in radio. I did music radio in Los Angeles for the bulk of my career. And while I was there, I'm old, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 was passed and signed by Bill Clinton. And I still remember to this day sitting in my apartment in Santa Monica getting a letter from my union, AFTRA, warning us what would happen if this legislation became law, if this bill was signed. And consolidation. Oh, my God. I lived through it, and I watched my industry that I loved completely disintegrate and become what it is now, with the behemoth, you know, iHeartRadio running everything. I'm sorry, it's iHeartRadio. I always get it mixed up. The you know, and Cumulus, which swallowed up ABC, and I mean, radio, the medium that I worked in since college, just doesn't exist anymore. Now we have the internet, which is a whole other story, and we can talk YouTube, which is one of the big parts of Google that probably should be broken up. But this is the competition doesn't exist. Now the Supreme Court even unanimously backed up these ownership rules that says one company in one market can own not only 8 radio stations, but 2 television stations and 3 newspapers. That's okay. That to me stinks of monopoly. And even worse, when you're talking about voices in the marketplace, it stifles others' voices in favor of one giant, big money backed voice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense. It shouldn't happen. So that's, you know, that's my world. So now I'm here fighting with YouTube, who decides to take down my streaming every once in a while because 30 seconds of a song play in a feature somewhere. I don't know what the answer is. And this is what you write about, Matt Stoller. So you said, when I said regulations need to be enforced, you said there could be a downside there. What needs to happen with antitrust? What needs to happen to monopolies? Do we go in and break them all up? What's the solution?
Yeah, break them all up. That's the solution.
Okay.
It's not that hard.
So we have all these.
Look, everything is complicated, right? You know, put it this way. Like when your toilet doesn't flush, you know, your plumbing is complicated, but you know when it's not flushing, right? So conceptually you get it, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to know all the details. We have too many monopolies. They're all over the place. They're in everything from, you know, candy to search engines, to airlines, mail sorting software, whatever you look at, it's consolidated. And these have all sorts of bad impacts, from higher consumer prices to lower wages to regional inequality to political dysfunction. Everybody hates them. This is something the right and left actually agrees on. Everyone's like, why is insulin, you know, hundreds of dollars?
Really?
It's a nest of little monopolies, both in the production of insulin, but also in the distribution and the payment systems. And it's all just super corrupt. And everybody hates it, right? And we spend our time arguing about cultural stuff or tax rates or whatever. But really what's happening is mass theft and non-enforcement of white-collar criminal law, or, you know, laws that are designed to constrain concentrated capital, which antitrust law, financial rules, and so on and so forth. So it's not that hard conceptually to figure out what to do. Just bring suits, enforce the law, and, you know, strengthen the law to decentralize power if you can. It's not that hard. I mean, Biden is actually, you know, I was not a huge Biden fan,
nor was
but he's doing a much better job than Obama did. And, you know, Obama was terrible across the board. He was a really bad president. And, you know, Biden's much better, at least on the stuff that I track, which is political economy.
Right. So far, so good. I mean, I said the same thing. I held my nose and voted for him because I was voting against the other guy. I would have voted for my dog, Jackson, who would have been a better president than the former guy. So, but Biden surprised me. Now, there are some things I'm not thrilled with, but I agree with your assessment. Obama did nothing about antitrust laws. In fact, under Obama, the 8 years of Obama, there was a lot of consolidation, a lot of mergers, a lot of these big companies. And the antitrust laws that are on the books gives the government the tools to say, no, these two companies, these two entities cannot merge, right?
Yeah, right. So just to give you a frame, it's worse than doing nothing. He actually actively encouraged consolidation of wealth and power, which is something the Democrats still can't face up to. But that's right. We have a law called the Clayton Act. The Clayton Act is supposed to say, if you have a merger, two companies are trying to merge, and that would reduce competition in a market, they're not allowed to.
Right.
It's a merger provision. And you know, if you look at the four big tech companies that Apple, Facebook, Amazon, and Google, you know, they bought, I don't know, 700-800 companies over the last 20 years. And they're not only has none of them been stopped, but not one of them has been even challenged. So these were just like waved through by enforcers. And this includes the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. It includes the Obama administration. And the Obama administration, when these firms really sort of solidified their power. But, you know, also the Trump administration, although Trump did bring antitrust suits against Google and Facebook. And it also includes European enforcers who let all these mergers go through as well. So this is a worldwide bipartisan catastrophe. And so that's what we're dealing with right now.
Okay.
And then that's just tech. I mean, it happened in lots of other areas. Like, for example, since you're in entertainment, Live Nation Ticketmaster.
Oh, God.
Right? Everybody hated Ticketmaster in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And like, wait a second, you're going to let them merge with Live Nation? And then what happens? The Obama enforcers, who all call themselves liberals, are like, oh, we believe in enforcement. You know, they're like, oh, well, Ticketmaster promised us they wouldn't do anything naughty. And you're like, you morons, what is wrong with you? Right. Like, these are the people that were running the Democratic Party and the Republican Party too, although Republicans, you kind of respect the sort of like, I kind of respect the like authenticity that they're just kind of crooks. They're like, they're not like pretending. They're like, they're not being self-righteous. They're like, right. We're here to steal. Right.
Right.
And I kind of respect that ethos. Like if you're just straightforward, but I don't like it, but like, anyway, so it's just like they're that just level of delusion and naivete and recklessness was just like pervasive. And it's all of these like white collar people who like hang out at the Federal Trade Commission, at DOJ, and at big law firms, the slightly overweight lawyers with bad posture that make $1,000 an hour. And, you know, they're all friends with one another. And they're all, you know, they care about like using the right salad fork. And meanwhile, they let the whole country just kind of burn down. And that's what we're dealing with right now. So, you know, I'm sorry for sort of ranting.
This is
like,
do.
What's going on? I mean, these are the people that run the world. And it's so irritating because they're not that talented.
Right.
I want malevolent villains. I want like cartoon villains. Give me somebody who I can respect as they dominate and crush us. No, we get the mediocrities. It's even like, it's so lame. But we're, you know, whatever, we'll beat them because they're not that good at this.
Right. And thing. Now like, you mentioned the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, who was a right. new chair in Lena Khan. And this right. is some, this is a Biden appointment that you're very happy with.
Yeah, Lena Khan is like the Simone Biles of antitrust, right? She's nice. 32. She got her start as a reporter after the financial crisis, writing about market power as a business journalist, right? So she didn't learn as an economist or as a lawyer. She learned as a journalist talking to business people and workers who were getting crushed by monopolies. And she wrote a bunch of this stuff up. And so she wrote about everything. You know, she wrote about banks and she wrote about, you know, airlines and seeds mm-hmm. and chemicals and poultry farming. And then she went to law school and books and she She used her journalistic skills and her legal training to write an article called Amazon Antitrust Paradox, which was an argument that Amazon is a dominant, very powerful firm, probably the most powerful or second most powerful company in the country, and yet it is invisible to the antitrust laws. And she asked the question why, and showed that what the way that Amazon structured its business was by sort of drawing a line around the antitrust laws and building around its weaknesses and blind spots. And the antitrust laws have been read narrowly to only constrain certain types of behavior. And so if you keep your prices low, you could do anything else that you want in the economy. And that's what Amazon has done. They kept low prices, but they've bullied and bludgeoned everyone else in the economy. And so that paper was a real, was the first sort of explanation, like a legal analysis of Amazon as a creature, not of innovation, not of entrepreneurship, but a creature of law and policy. And it kind of exploded and turned her into a star. And then she went and worked for the House Antitrust Subcommittee, where she was the lead investigator in a 16-month investigation of these firms, which came out with a 400-page report last year saying, here are the markets, here's how they work, here are the different pieces of the companies, here's where they're efficient, here's where they're coercive, and here are recommendations. And it was a groundbreaking report that had global ramifications. And so when Biden picked her to be an FTC commissioner and then ultimately chair, you know, it's a really big deal. And what's more interesting is she's very progressive. But what's most interesting about her particular nomination is that she got 21 Republican votes, right? So this wasn't, you know, we're used to, like, if you're a lefty, right, you're used to, you know, having to beg the moderates to maybe give you the time of day occasionally. Right. And because you don't have the votes, right? And you need the moderates to help you. But in this case, what's happening, and what this is why antitrust is so interesting, is that conservatives are changing their minds on the problem of market power, because they've seen, you know, they saw Trump get deplatformed, they saw Parler get deplatformed, and they experienced the raw power of these private entities. And it's like throwing their whole ideology into confusion. Their libertarian views and social conservative views are kind of at odds with one another. And so that's why, you know, a bunch of them voted for Lena, because they thought, well, you know, we have problems with big tech. We have, I mean, they also are frustrated at in the agricultural sector. Mm-hmm. Meat packers are screwing cattle ranchers, and cattle ranchers are a conservative interest group. Same with pharmacists, same with grocers. There's, at this point, like, there's a war in like the business community, and that's spilling over into politics, and it doesn't line up the way that most politics does. It's like you got this very progressive, you know, populist woman who's getting a ton of, you know, Republican, like right-wing Republican votes. So it's like, it's totally interesting, and it breaks all of the like traditional narratives. And it's like, because it's has nothing to do with Trump. It has, it's not partisan. It's optimistic. It's entirely about the politics of the marketplace. Like, none of it makes any sense in sort of traditional kind of political narratives. It's why you don't see it on CNN and MSNBC. Ah. Although weirdly, you do see it on CNBC. They did a lot of segments on Lena. And you see on Fox News, they did like Tucker Carlson did a segment praising Lena.
Really?
Like, wow. Really weird. And then Ilhan Omar like tweeted in praise of Tucker Carlson praising Lena. It is weird.
Oh my God. Well, really even the package of bills that worked through the Judiciary Committee, the subcommittee you mentioned, passed in weird configurations where a number of the Democrats on the committee, most notably some, you know, from California, because maybe that's where tech industry is based.
Ted Lieu. I mean, it was bad. I mean, Ted Lieu was awful. You know, just awful on it. And, you know, he's always been bad on big tech market power questions. It's just not something Democrats noticed. The worst was Zoe Laughlin. I mean, she was she was appalling, but she was just representing Silicon Valley and big tech interests kind of straight up.
But Ro Khanna, he's not on the committee. I was going to say Ro Khanna represents closer to that district, Ro Khanna, but he's not on the committee.
Ro Khanna says a bunch of stuff, you know, like, I think he's trying to like split the difference. Mm. And sometimes he says things that are just like not true and not right. And sometimes he says things that make a lot of sense. I mean, he's come out for breaking up Facebook, but then a few years ago, he was like, I just don't believe in breaking up companies. It's against my philosophy. So I think he's kind of like learning and, you know, trying to come to like a coherent position. But, you know, the ones who were on the committee were, so I'm like, you know, I'm Ro Khanna, you know, he was great on vaccine monopolies and like the trip waiver and stuff. So like, I'm not, I don't demand perfection from anyone. I feel like if you've done useful things, and he's done some stuff on defense monopolies, I'm just like, okay, cool. You know, I don't care if people are like, if
you can't be great on everything,
you do some good stuff. I'm like, okay, cool. You get to play around, figure stuff out. I don't mind. But like Zoe Lofgren, that was like, no, there's no excuse for that. And except just supporting large tech, the interests of large technology firms. I don't think she's corrupt. I think she's just like, I want to support, you know, Google's monopoly. Like that was pretty straight up. And then Eric Swalwell was just horrible.
Yeah.
Eric Swalwell was really bad. And like, what's this guy? Luis Correa. And just there was a number of them that were just really bad.
But he had some Republicans who were on the right side of this, along with Democrats who were. David Cicilline is the chair of that subcommittee, right?
David Cicilline is the chair of the subcommittee, and he kind of led it. And then you had Ken Buck, who's a Colorado right-wing Republican, who was his main ally.
Wow.
And then the weird thing, and this, I think it was uncomfortable for a number of the coalition partners, it's like by far the strongest member on most of the votes in terms of arguing.
I know what you're going to say here.
It was Matt Gaetz.
Oh my God.
And it's just kind of like, there's one like person who's like on the left who tweeted about like, praising Matt Gaetz, and then like later on I noticed the tweet was deleted and I was like, okay. I see how it is. So, you know, because it's weird, right? This stuff is weird and uncomfortable. And like we're trained to like hate each other.
Right.
But you have these weird coalitions. You had Cicilline and Buck on one side, right, trying to like do something about big tech. And then the other side you had Jim Jordan and Daryl Issa, another California guy. And Zoe Lofgren.
Oh, God.
And so the weird, like, Silicon Valley Dem and California Dem with these, like, you know, corporatist, you know, corrupt Republicans aligned against, like, weird, you know, populist Dems and Rs who are going after big tech. And that was the dynamic with the markup. It was also the dynamic with the investigation. And it's very weird. It's like,
it is weird.
It's such a strange dynamic. Because even the way Jim Jordan was sort of the leader protecting big tech, but he didn't frame it that way. He kept talking about how, oh, these bills won't really go after big tech. I want to take on big tech by going after censorship or whatever. And it was all bad faith. And like his staffer, you know, is a Mercatus guy, like a total libertarian, really doesn't want to do anything on like to touch corporations. That's what's really going on with Jim Jordan. But even he can't pretend that, you know, he's protecting the market. He has to pretend like he's going after big tech while trying to sabotage it. And so that's how weak their position is, because the business world is all like in a flutter. So it's super strange. It's not a left-right dynamic.
No.
I really enjoy it because it like makes everybody a little uncomfortable, which I enjoy.
It is fascinating. It is seeing where they all shake out. And so what happens now? So these six bills all passed out of the committee. Does it go to the full House now, where it's going to be another fight along weird lines?
It's not clear. Steny Hoyer was saying, so the reason I didn't comment on the bills is that the bills had significant technical problems. And, you know, it had, by the time you asked me to come on the show, it had become obvious that it was just kind of like a political fight. Mm. And these were sort of what are called messaging bills, which is just kind of like you're voting to show what you think about the general issue. You don't expect that bill to be put into law. Oh. And I didn't want to say that before the markup happened, because then those words would be used against, you know, that could be used against the side that was pushing for big tech. And it could have been used as a pretext for a lot of people that wanted to avoid having to take a position.
Okay.
So that's why I didn't, I mean, it was a little bit like, you know, whatever. I didn't enjoy
it. Okay. I understand. Right.
But that's what was going on. And so they have some technical problems, which I think people recognize. And Steny Hoyer, it also is like, there's 50 or 60 Democrats on the House floor that don't want to vote on it. So, you know, and then you probably have like, you know, 30 to 40 Republicans that want to vote for it. So it's a weird coalition. It's hard to whip. Steny Hoyer says he doesn't want to, he doesn't know how to, when they're going to bring the bills to the floor or if they are. He's like, they're not ready. And, you know, there's probably bad faith there. I don't really know. But and there are other antitrust bills that are going to be coming, I think. And some of the general, like, they did pass several bills that will pass. Like, one of them is going to raise the budget for the FTC. One of them is going to allow state attorney generals to be more aggressive with antitrust. Those are sort of minor, but they're meaningful. Those will pass. Those will get signed into law. I suspect the committee will move some other, like, kind of jurisdictional legal pieces as well. And then these bills will become part of a broader debate that's taking place in the Senate. Klobuchar has a bunch of bills there. It's taking place in states. There's a debate in New York State about strengthening antitrust laws. There's starting to be a debate in California about doing that. And so at a state, Wyoming just strengthened their antitrust laws. So at a state level, there's a lot of debates as well. So I think that, I think that this is the what happened was very good in terms of passing all of those bills. The bills themselves, I guess I should tell you what they do. What the bills basically do is they say that these large tech firms are not allowed to have conflicts of interest baked into their business model. Mm-hmm. That's the gist of what they do. So they say, like, if you're Google and you're showing results, everybody gets their information through Google. Google, you're not allowed to show Google results ahead of everybody else. Uh-huh. Like, if Yelp's reviews are better, you have to show that, right?
Right.
And also, like, if you're Amazon and you have your marketplace and you're also selling through your marketplace, so you're competing and writing the rules, you have to separate out those two lines of business into separate independent companies.
Right. And one of them would prevent, say, Amazon from buying up some of these companies that sell on their site, which is something that they seemingly forced these companies into selling to them.
Yeah. Right. So it splits up these companies. It also, you're right, it has a merger provision saying if you're a big tech company, it makes it much harder to buy other companies. So there's a number of things that they do. But the basic idea is to reduce the concentrations of power that these firms have. And then, you know, some of these are network systems that you can't break up because, you know, network systems have efficiencies there. So they say you have to keep that system neutral. You're not allowed to, like, discriminate, pick winners and losers on your system. Those are some other, like, that. There's a little bit of a regulatory apparatus there as well. And so those ideas came from, I didn't love how they were done. I didn't think they were done. You know, there were some problems, but the report made recommendations along those lines. And so these bills are going to now be a part of the debate. Hopefully some of them will get passed in some form this cycle, maybe next cycle. Like, but the problem isn't going away. The problem is getting more intense and the business community is getting more and more split. And so, you know, you're seeing strange alliances emerge. And on the Democratic side, I don't know. I'm not really following elections as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. But it seems like Democrats don't like monopolies anymore. It's kind of an article of faith. Like, nobody's like, yeah, I'm a fan of monopolies.
Right.
To the extent that they talk about it, which some of them do, they're like, I'm against monopolies. And I think you see that on the right increasingly. J.D. Vance in his first ad talked about, had Jeff Bezos as a villain, had Google as a villain, talked about taxing multinationals. I'm not sure it's in good faith, but, like, you know, you can, you know, whether politicians and their arguments are operating in good or bad faith, the basic environment has changed. So Americans want their Congress and their policymakers to deal with market power questions. They want the price of insulin to come down.
Yeah.
They want airlines to be reasonable. They want to be treated fairly. And the law, the legal framework that's blocking that is bad antitrust enforcement. I guess the biggest challenge is the judges, right? The judges, and it's not just Trump judges, right?
Okay.
So, you know, remember the Sprint T-Mobile merger?
Yes.
So, like, of course, what's happening now is, like, prices are not, you know, they would be lower, but they're not. They laid a bunch of people off, even though they said they wouldn't. Service is not as good as it would be. Like, the merger should have been blocked.
Right.
The judge who let that through was an Obama appointee, right?
Okay.
And the judge that just dismissed the Facebook case, like, the FTC brought an antitrust case saying we should split up Facebook into Instagram and WhatsApp. Those mergers were illegal. A judge just dismissed it.
Today, right? That just happened.
It just happened like a week ago.
Okay.
It'll get refiled, so it's not that big a deal. But it was still like a humiliation. That's an Obama appointee, right? So it's not, you know, and he read the law very narrowly. So this is, you know, yeah, the Trump judges are worse, right? You know, it'd be nice if the Supreme Court weren't controlled by, you know, by conservatives. But, you know, the really bad antitrust cases, the one I'm thinking of is called Trinco. It was in 2005. It was unanimous, right? Uh-huh. Stephen Breyer and RBG were on board. And they've always, you know, they are pro-monopolists. It's
right.
It's why they were confirmed like 90-3 or whatever. It's because the Chamber of Commerce was supportive. So we have a broad problem with the judiciary in general, which you can fix by just passing different laws. But like, that's the big challenge, is the judiciary.
Do we have any hope that things are going to get better? I mean, it seems like the odds are stacked against us. Do you think with the new FTC in place that something will be done?
Well, look, I mean, my grandfather had a joke. He said, one day I was feeling down. So I told my friend, you know, feeling down. And he said, cheer up, things could be worse. And I cheered up, and sure enough, things got worse. But I'm just kidding. Look, everybody wants, you know, look, everyone has been in politics is trained to be pessimistic. Oh, it's so hard. Oh, mm-hmm. Nothing good can ever happen. Right. Like, cause, and all of our like journalists are trained to like, look for scandals. Look at this hypocrite. Look at this, you know, and the reality is things are getting in terms of the politics of this, they're getting so much better. Right. Like we have, you know, there's just another antitrust suit today filed by states against Google for their app store. Like, it's not that the situation is getting better. The situation is getting worse really quickly because you know, you have lots of mergers and whatnot, and like healthcare costs and all that stuff is going up because of monopoly power.
Yes.
But the politics is getting way better, right? So you have Joe Biden, who's going to kind of come out with an executive order that's going to attack market power across the government. You have Republicans starting to wake up to this. You have this amazing new enforcer at the FTC. Like, this is awesome. We're going to change this. We're going to win. This isn't like, you know, that's the thing. It's like, this is not, there is no reason to be pessimistic here. The odds are not stacked against us. Like, we're going to win this. Like, it's not, I mean, there are really hard problems that I don't know how to deal with, but like this one, we're going to win. Like, that's the thing. It's like, we're going to win this one. Like, it's really obvious at this point.
I love hearing that. So to stay on top of it, people can subscribe to your Substack to Big. Go to mattstoller.substack.com. I'll put a link to it on the blog at nicolesandler.com. Read the book Goliath, and that way we'll be up to speed, and then we can follow along as things move along. Matt, I got to thank you so much for coming on today. Like I said at the beginning, I remember you from way back. You were one of the OG bloggers. You hung with Digby and Dave Johnson, who are still friends of mine, who, you know, those are my people, and Howie Klein in them. But you then moved into the legislative field. You became an insider. And now you're kind of on the outside again. What do you like best?
I just like telling I like writing, and I like sort of having a foot inside the policymaking world and then being able to sort of tell some things about how it works. I like just explaining how this stuff works. I think it's fun and meaningful, and it lets me sleep at night. But kudos to you. I love Howie.
Yeah, I love Howie too.
And kudos to you for bringing up the 96 Telecom Act. One of the worst laws in American history. Bill Clinton doesn't get enough credit for ruining everything.
That's right. He destroyed my industry. I mean, you're from Miami. Did you grow up down in Miami?
Oh, I did, but don't take it personally. He destroyed most industries.
I know. Right. But that was mine. So I'm in South Florida now, but grew up here, but was out in LA for 15 years and was there when everything changed. And this was my industry. So I have believe me, the 96 Telecom Act, I will never let him live that one down because it's.
So you know that in Arkansas, like University of Arkansas, I think they keep trying to name a law professor chair after him. And the faculty keeps rebelling, saying, hey, you guys, he was disbarred.
Right. Yeah.
This is like little fight. And the Clinton people are being like, well, technically he wasn't disbarred. He voluntarily gave up his bar license. It's like, that's so Clinton.
Yeah, and he still fucked up my industry. So screw him. God damn it.
Just the worst. These are just the worst people.
The worst. And on that note, Matt Stoller, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to finally meet you. I really appreciate you coming on. And anytime you have the desire to explain how things work to us, please come back.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.